entertainer, and entrepreneur answered the call. He joined forces with friend, businessman, and scholar, Christopher Hart. Together, they are guardians of liberty and the American way.
Ladies and gentlemen, introducing the champions of political professional wrestling, Lair Adams and Christopher Hart, the American adversaries. Drive time.
Happy Cinco de Mayo! And I know Spanish. That translates to a fifth of mayonnaise, doesn't it? Oh, I don't know. Ooh, the information coming out of Baltimore is having a negative impact on the rioters. As unbelievable as it may seem, we now know several black groups directed the looters away from black-owned businesses and sicked them on the Asian and Hispanic stores. You see, in this hood, the Afro-Americans are the largest demographic, which makes the others minorities. Oops! Who's the oppressor now? Who's the man? Who's the racist? Not me, I'm Lair Adams on the all-new 2-hour drive time. And the American adversaries on AM 660, The Answer. In this hood, we got the man, our host, Christopher Hart.
All right, thanks so much, Lair Adams. And if you folks have been listening to us long, you would have known that already because we talked about it, I believe, a couple of Sundays ago. Anyway, welcome to the show. That's right, you got us for 2 hours drive time, prime time on AM 660, The Answer. Don't forget, we are coming to you live from the Mercury Free Broadcasting studios. Don't forget, for the very best in mercury-free dental care, call my dentist, Dr. James E. Hardy, at 407-678-3399. And speaking of dental care, if you need some new choppers and you want some implants, you can get them half price. That's right. You never know what they're going to come up with at the half price store. Just go to AmazingRadioDeals.com and find out. Half price tuition, great Christian schools for your children. Half price air conditioning for you and your spouse and all your loved ones. And half price choppers so that you can eat that Cafe Positano great Italian food if you need them. All right, just go to AmazingRadioDeals.com or call Bill Files at 407-618-1760 to get one of those half price deals. And the half price tuition, I mean, you can't beat that. The list of schools just keeps getting longer and longer. And they're great Christian schools all over Central Florida, from Kissimmee to Sanford. So, and all locations in between. All right, that's right. We are coming to you live tonight for 2 hours, folks. Give us a call at 407-774-8255. That was Lair Adams. I am Christopher Hart. Nick LoCicero is on the bridge, so we're in good hands as he manhandles those controls in there. And don't forget, it is Tuesday, so if you got a computer or laptop that you think kind of is slowing down on you or all clogged up, go down to Refresh Computers and get that thing tuned up for free on Free Tune-Up Tuesday. Real easy to do. You just walk in the door with the thing, and they'll take it from there. And you can just hang around the store and wait. If you want, you can leave and come back. It doesn't usually take very long for them to do it, though. And it'd be a great time to browse around and check out all the great deals they got down there at Refresh Computers, refreshcomputers.net, 407-478-8200, 407-478-8200. David Levitt's going to be in on the show tomorrow, as well as Colonel Danny McKnight. So we got a big slate of
big
guests
show.
Yeah, for tomorrow night. Okay, got a lot to talk about tonight. We'll start off with Baltimore, since Lair went there with his opening remarks, so we kind of plan to go that way anyway. Loretta Lynch is paying a visit to Baltimore today, and I must say, Loretta is not so anxious to lynch the six. She is saying that the federal investigation is going to take a while, going to take a good long while. And it's only because she knows that you have to have some actually honest-to-God evidence or eyewitness testimony before you can actually bring some legitimate charges against somebody. And I think Ms. Mosby would be well-served to pay attention to Ms. Lynch, who was, by the way, a New York prosecutor for some time, evidently a very successful one. Worked closely with police departments in the New York area. And matter of fact, said some words today that I thought the president should have been saying a long time ago. He needs to say them every day. Stuff that we say around here. Something very reminiscent, reminded me of Larry's closing remarks, to be honest with you, from last Sunday night. You know, where you just walk, it's sort of walk a mile in their moccasins and then come back and we'll talk about it, okay? All right, you think it's so easy to be a cop? You think it's so easy to determine who good guys are and bad guys are? Go try it one time, and then we'll talk. And this woman actually has a little bit of experience knowing about things like that. And so she's going to be a little bit more, shall we say, thorough in her investigation and not in such a hurry to bring charges. She's going to want some actual evidence to back them up. And it's hard for me to believe that this prosecutor, Ms. Mosby, in Baltimore, has much more than the conclusion drawn by the medical examiner. I don't think she has anything more than that. That is incriminating, other than that they didn't put the guy in the seatbelt. And I don't know that they didn't initially put him in a seatbelt, or try to anyway. And then when they put him on the floor of the van, the intent was that he would be safer there, given what he was doing back there. So, and then you want to talk about all the precious gifts this woman gave to a defense, an astute defense team the other day. She didn't do justice any favors at all. And it's because basically she is a young person driven by ideology and idealism and doesn't know what the hell she is doing. And she thinks that, you know, bringing charges against these guys and, you know, taking up the cause, if you will, of the oppressed blacks in this community, even though three of the officers are blacks themselves. The driver of the van who has the worst charges against him is a black man.
Oh, yeah, totally unnoticed by Morgan Freeman, who was talking about how it's always white officers going after the poor, innocent black guy. And you're right, half and half here.
Half and half.
Oh, and the new,
like
new
Barack
mantra.
Obama.
Yeah, but the new mantra, Chris, is if you're an officer, it doesn't matter the color of your skin. You aren't black.
Well, you can
be as black as you can be, but if you're an officer, you ain't black, and that's the attitude now.
Yeah. Black and white is blue, or whatever, or what, or blue and black is white.
Yeah.
So we're gonna have to come up with a whole new color chart around here. You know, kind of like those old chemistry charts. You know, the elementary tables you used to see in high school.
Well, that's the problem with this type of liberalism. It starts to fall apart and all over itself.
Well, anyway, at least, you know, Loretta Lynch, I must say, is off on the right foot. I can't imagine Eric Holder. I can imagine him taking his time with the investigation, because he's, you know, that's the federal authorities. They naturally do that anyway. But I cannot imagine him saying the things that she said today. Basically in support of police officers and praising police officers. It just hasn't happened in this administration yet. It needs to come out of the president's mouth, too. And the president, by the way, he's found his life's work. Did you know that, Larry? He's found his life's work?
I'm kind of fearful.
Well, there's a story in the Orlando Sentinel today. Obama vows to devote life to fight for equality.
Oh, I thought it was going to be global warming or something. Equality now. He's going to make everybody equal.
Yeah, you know, he with them big old ears, he can spread himself around. He is launching another one of his private sector initiatives called My Brother's Keeper Alliance. And this is something similar that he started last year, trying to basically, in a way, I suppose it's a good idea, and that is to try to sort of provide mentors, if you will, or at least alternatives to black youths and Hispanic youths, to get them to stay in school, to get them to educate themselves, to get them to actually go out and get jobs and work. Unfortunately, he doesn't walk the walk. You know, he's talking the talk, but he doesn't walk the walk. You know, it's going to take more than just giving this little bit of lip service, especially when you go out and you basically take up the banner of the victimhood, the downtrodden. At some point, the downtrodden have got to be told, it's going to be up to you whether you stay downtrodden or not. But if you want to get out of being downtrodden, do it now. Otherwise, soon enough, we are going to make you do it, because we will begin to wean you off those nice little niceties that you get. Now, is that going to happen this day and age? No. Should it happen? Yes. Because it would be best for everyone involved. Everyone involved. And I always liken, you know, what has gone wrong with the war on poverty. It always reminds me of the way it started out. It actually started out in the right direction, but then white Democrats in Congress hijacked what was going on and steered it in the wrong direction, which has brought us to where we are today. If you've listened to the show for a long time, you might know what I'm talking about. If you don't, or you want to hear it again, stick around, because we'll take the break and I'll tell you what I mean when we come back. You are listening to the American Adversaries. We are now live 5 to 7, Monday through Friday. Thanks so very much to everyone around here at Salem Media Group for making that possible, and you for being out there listening to us. Without you, we ain't nothing, but we will be right back. Show, folks. That's right. You got me, Christopher Hart, and Lair Adams here live on AM 660, The Answer, blasting to you all the way up and down I-4 on the East Coast. And appreciate you being out there. 407-774-8255. I won't spend a lot of time on this because I know I've talked about it before. But when Lyndon Johnson first started his war on poverty, basically Congress funded it with, I believe it was like $10 or $20 million. And not back in the mid-60s, that's a fair amount of money. But in the overall scheme of things and what they were attempting to do, it wasn't much. And he didn't know, you know, really where to go from there. So he appointed someone to head it up. And he went to a fellow by the name of Sergeant Shriver.
Oh, yeah.
Some of you may remember him. He was a go-to guy for a vice presidential candidate when I forget what it was, but one of the other vice presidential candidates, some scandal or something happened. I forget what it was. But anyway, and by the way, his daughter, Maria Shriver, was
Schwarzenegger's wife.
Exactly. And
the lady of the square jaw.
Exactly. And she needed to square off his jaw after what he did right under her nose in her own house. Anyway, and his wife and Maria's mother started the Special Olympics. And great family and longtime Democrats. I'm not going to call them liberals. Democrats. Maria. May be more liberal.
But the old Democrat.
Yeah, exactly, which was more conservative than liberal. And so Johnson recruited Sergeant Shriver, and Sergeant Shriver didn't know what to do. I mean, nobody had ever done this before in the United States. So he had this budget. So he said, I'll go down, pardon me, and talk to the people in the areas that need the money or that need the assistance. So he went into, I believe it was Mississippi and Alabama. He didn't go to everywhere in the states. He went in particular communities, and here's what he did. Excuse me just a moment. Sorry, I had a tickle in my throat.
Hey, I get it all the time now with this pollen.
Yeah. He went into those communities, and he found the leaders of the black communities. They were pastors, they were doctors, they were educators, and they were business people. Because guess what? They basically had thriving black communities. Yes, they were segregated away from the whites, but they basically had microcosms of what we enjoyed on a macrocosm. And they had, for the most part, intact families. Back then, one out of three children were born out of wedlock, and now it's two out of three now are born out of wedlock. One out of three back then was. So he goes into the community, he finds the leaders, and he says, look, here's what I'm going to do. He says, you are the ones most capable of determining where your needs are and how to address them, right? Yeah. Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to give you some money, and it's up to you to spend the money. And I'm not going to tell you how to spend the money. You spend the money the way you leaders see fit. And I'll come back in a year, and if I determine that you've spent the money wisely, I'll give you a little more until you don't need it anymore. But if I determine that you have not spent the money wisely, you will not get another red cent. And they said, okay, we'll take the deal.
Pretty good incentive.
Yeah. So he gives them the money. He goes away. He comes back a year later. And in the meantime, the media had kind of been sniffing around watching this. And he kind of did a little tour around in the cities that he'd gone to. And lo and behold, they had taken the money and they had spent it wisely. They had built onto their churches. They had built clinics. They had improved their schools. They had improved some of their infrastructure. They had begun to improve their communities. Guess what happened? He goes in front of Congress to testify as to the effectiveness of his program. Well, they had also pointed out that that some of the money had been used to set up voter registration drives. And because Shriver, there was no strings on it. He said, you do what you... They could have gambled it away. They just wouldn't have gotten any more, according to Shriver's rules. Well, Shriver goes into Congress. Now, he's not aware of the brewing crisis over voter registration of blacks, right? Who were registering, guess what, as... Guess what they were registering as? Take a guess.
Democrat.
No, they were registering as Republicans.
Wow.
Oh, yeah.
Wait a minute.
Because the Republicans are the ones who teamed up with Lyndon Baines and got them their voting rights, the Civil Rights Act and the voting rights, too. That's right. You go back in history. I mean, Carl Jackson does a great job of documenting this. Beck was doing it the other morning, documenting this. You go back in history, blacks have benefited from Republican political actions, not Democrats. And the same holds true till today. So he goes in front of Congress and he sits down in front of the senators, guys like Al Gore Sr., Richard Russell, who the present Senate office building is named after, and others, and Robert Byrd and et al. And he sits down and he thinks he's going to get some pats on the back. Because the media had been reporting on the evening news and in newspapers the astounding gains that were happening and the astounding things, good things happening in these communities. How these people were strengthening their communities, strengthening their families, strengthening their churches, strengthening their schools, strengthening their clinics. But because they were registering blacks to vote, the white Democrats would have none of it. And when they got old Sarge up there, they tore him a new one. And when he came out of there, he didn't know what had happened. He didn't know what had hit him. And he lost his job over it. They took it over. And then all the strings came with it. All the strings came attached. Okay, if you're going to get welfare, you can't have a man in the house. If you're going to have children out of wedlock, you can't then marry a man, or you will lose your welfare. All the incentives to get on welfare and to stay on it were put in place by white Democrats because they didn't like the fact that blacks were registering to vote as Republicans. Oh, yeah, they are so good, aren't they? And now today we see the result of their controlling things. The unemployment rate in the community where Fred Gray was killed is almost 1 out of 4 for blacks. That's insane. And the president's going around bemoaning these things. Bemoaning them. And the liberals are all bemoaning them as though they had nothing to do with it whatsoever. Well, I'm here to tell you, if they had had nothing to do with it whatsoever, those communities would be a whole lot better off than they are today. Even if nobody had given them a dime. Even if no one had given them a dime, they would be better off than where they are today. Because at least then, they would be on their own and be self-sufficient and be, let's just say, a joy for God to look at. God doesn't want helpless people. When you die, he wants your spirit strong. That's one reason why he stuck us here and gave us obstacles to overcome. He didn't want life to be easy for us because we would be a bunch of marshmallows at the next level. He wants strong, spirited souls. That's why he put us in this environment to start our existence. He doesn't want a bunch of doggone worthless wussies sticking around with their hands out for every doggone generosity that they can. It's for you tonight because we got a whole another hour and a half to go. You are listening to the American Adversaries.
We're here for 2 hours, so don't go away.
Going downtown.
AM 660, The Answer.
Hey, folks, this is WWE Hall of Famer Hacksaw Jim Duggan. I took on the Iron Sheik from Iran. I took on Nikolai Volkov from the USSR. I took on Andre the Giant from France. I just want you to know, time for more political mayhem with the American Adversaries. Tough guy, how about a ho?
And away we go with the second half of the first hour of our two-hour show. That's right, folks. You got the American Adversaries for 2 hours now, Monday through Friday. 407-774-8255 is still the number if you want to be a part of the show. Just pick that thing up and give us a call. Okay, we were talking about the so-called war on poverty. Well, I think it was more the war on the black family and the black way of life. And it was very successful in destroying both of those things.
And the implementation of socialism to some extent.
Yeah, absolutely. But as I said, we're not at the point, though, where people are going to turn drastically away from it, although that's what would be best for all parties involved, that's for sure. Mike Huckabee is in the race. If any Mike Huckabee fans out there want to call and tell us why you like him, love to hear it. I was impressed with him when I met him at the Awakening. I guess it's been month and a half, 2 months ago now. I mean, time just so flies by.
He's a likable guy.
He's a likable guy. He is a great speaker, great communicator. I believe at his core, he has the right values. I believe on the surface, he's a bit malleable, shall we say. Certainly was troubled by his views on Common Core until he has adjusted them. I don't think he's going to be around at the end, however. I think he is, if I were Jeb Bush, I'd probably be happy he got in today. Because he'll be locking horns mostly with guys like Rand Paul and Ted Cruz and Marco Rubio. I think we may have talked about this yesterday. And I think Huckabee is basically missed his chance. I think that the voters that went for him before are going to be a little bit more reluctant to go for him this time. And having said that, though, I still think that he provides Jeb a little bit of relief, without having to, fend for himself entirely against the likes of Rubio and Ted Cruz. But nonetheless, it deepens the field and it widens the debate. And I'm glad to see it. Like I said, though, I don't think he'll be around at the end. I don't think he'll make the final five. But As I said, he is a good communicator, and if he's out there talking the right talk and walking the right walk, all I can say is the more the merrier. That makes, I think, what, six now, the total, who have declared. You got Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, of course, these three here this week.
Seems Rubio.
Like, Rubio. So that's six that have made it official. Jeb hasn't made it official yet, although we all know he's doing it. And so now it's going to come down to some of the outliers, because I think most of the core ones are in, with perhaps the exception of Scott Walker. I think Chris Christie is out.
I sure hope Trump doesn't throw his hat in the rain. I got to tell you, what an embarrassment this guy is. You hear his comments on the lady that put together this thing about drawing the cartoons? You know, here you had mentioned a few weeks ago you would like to see every newspaper in the country run a cartoon.
Yep, we're going to talk
and
about
Donald
that.
And Donald Trump was just, he just thinks she's the worst woman on earth.
And Lara's talking about Pamela Geller.
Yep.
And Pamela's been on our show before. I met her at the first awakening I went to when I met Dr. John Matusitz and others. And she came on our show. She's been on our show.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll try to get her back on again. She's a feisty woman, as you might guess. She's been on Gallagher the last couple of shows. She was on last Friday talking about the upcoming event, which was this thing in Garland, Texas, this competition to draw caricatures of Muhammad. And then she was on again Monday morning with Mike Gallagher talking about what had happened there. And they were very prepared for something like that to happen. But Donald Trump is not the only one to criticize her for doing that event. Michael Medved talked about it a little bit this afternoon and pointed out something I wasn't aware of, and that is that this city where they were doing this event, had the reason she did it there was because they had an event several months ago that was put on by the Muslim community, and I should have written it down, and I don't. I'm just paraphrasing right now, but it basically was join the prophet. And because it had that phrase in it, she decided to basically take the fight to them.
Well, that's something we need to ask her directly about, because I don't know where Michael Medved got his information as what her comments were on that.
Well, I don't know if she even said anything about
it.
But basically, he said that was, and by the way, that's how it was reported in the media, as join the Muhammad event. He said, but it was actually titled Join Muhammad as We Fight Against Islamic Terrorism.
Something like that.
So, Medved was pointing out you're kind of not poking the snake. You're poking people who, on the surface at least, look like they're trying to be our friends in the eye. Having said that, she had every right to do what she did, and I am all for it. I'm all for doing those things. As a matter of fact, it would have been great if some of the people from that Muslim community, if they were really fighting against this sort of thing, would have been there and maybe even had an entry in the doggone thing. So the poke the snake analogy, though, I think is entirely wrong. I mean, in a way, if she did anything, she flushed them out.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking, too, Chris. You're right. Actually, she helped us. We got rid of two guys. Didn't cost us any people and very little material.
Well, one guy did get shot.
Well, he got popped in the foot. Yeah.
One guy was wounded.
Ankle.
Thank God it wasn't a life-threatening injury and something he'll probably, for the most part, fully recover from. But it reminded me of when I was going to college. A couple of years while I was, I'd go to college and run up a little student debt, and I'd work a year or two and pay it down. And a couple of years I worked for Hubbard Construction on the old road crew, what I called the chain gang, and we were building a stretch of John Young Parkway that runs between Sand Lake Road and the Beeline Expressway down there. And back then there wasn't nothing out there, and but the Beeline had a bridge that they had already built, anticipating building this. They got roads on maps down there at the county all over this place that haven't been built yet, that eventually will be built. Anyway, to get back to this, they had built this bridge, and we would park our vehicles underneath this overpass, to get out of the sun and stuff. And lo and behold, one day, there was a rattlesnake out there. And this old boy, Dean Groover, was a cowboy, And he wore the cowboy hat and everything. And Dean was cowboy through and through, 4-H, you know, and all this stuff in high school and everything. And he knew how to deal with rattlesnakes. Now, me, I'm pretty much a city slicker, right? So I'm looking at the rattlesnake, and I got my shovel. And I'm kind of guiding the snake, you know, trying to shoo him away. And old Dean climbs down off his, I think he was driving a front end loader or something. He climbs down off of that, and he's kind of smiling. He says, "I'll show you how it's done." And he knelt down in front of the thing, kind of off to one side, and he got it to coil up, ready to strike.
Uh-huh.
Okay? But he was far enough away that if the snake struck, that he wasn't going to get him.
Uh-huh.
So, but then what he did was he took his left hand, he was right-handed, and he took his left hand and he stuck it out in front of the snake's face and started wiggling his fingers until the snake struck at his fingers. And he had it far enough out that the snake wasn't going to hit it. So the snake lands flat on the ground.
Extended.
Basically now helpless.
Because he can't strike unless he's coiled.
Exactly. He stomps on the snake's neck, pulls out his knife, whacks its head off.
That's a quick way to do it.
He drew the snake out, you see.
Mm.
And that's kind of what happened in Garland over there. I don't recommend this, but I do say this. I'm not going to let some... I don't care who it is. Just infringe on my freedom of speech. I don't care if it's a liberal or a Muslim. We have that for a reason. And Carl Jackson gave a great soliloquy on his show Saturday morning. You know, it's the most important of all the amendments. All the other amendments kind of depend on it or support it. Without it, all the rest basically collapse.
Yep.
All right, let's go to John, who's on the line right now. John, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being
on. Congratulations on a two-hour program. It's about time, guys.
Thank you very much. I appreciate that. Thank you, sir.
Talking about presidential candidates and things like that,
yep.
I'd like to talk to you or discuss with your audience a little bit about the kind of leadership attributes we should be looking for. And we can't miss, if we really look to the Bible, some direction there.
You're absolutely right.
We can start with stewardship and service, because all leadership begins with service.
Yeah.
But there are three important attributes that are very scriptural. One, they are priest, prophet, and king.
I'm sorry, say that again.
Priest, prophet, and king.
Okay, priest, prophet, and king. Take them one at a time.
Okay, priest. The priest is the one that knows the needs of the people. At all levels of their life,
okay.
Especially the corporate needs as a community. And that can be any organization of any size. It could be a community, a municipality. It could be a state or the U.S. Country, right?
Exactly.
Okay. We go to prophet. Now, the prophet is the one that is really hearing from God, and he's the one that is getting the vision for the people. He knows where the people need to go to better their lives, to improve the life, not only for the people, but also for the global, for the planet, for the whole global scale of things, at a microcosmic, but also at a macrocosmic level.
Yeah, yeah, the prophet is the one who sees things sort of as he's looking out. Looking outside, looking in, so to speak.
Right. We have to look at the world that we live in, the material world. There is not a thing, either man-made or God-made, that did not begin in the realm of the spirit.
Okay.
You look at a building. You look at an automobile. Anything. At some point, that was an idea, and there was somebody or a team of people that actually brought that to fruition so that now we can be driving a vehicle on the roads.
Okay. All right. Okay. All right. And
so
then
from there,
king?
We go to king.
Yeah.
The king is the one that is the administrator. He is the executor. He's the guy that actually brings all of the components of the other two attributes into the process of executing. He is the administrator, and it's very keen that this is the part where that leader will recognize talent, he will recognize reliability, organizational skills, and all the other, you know, good components of leadership, so that he surrounds himself with those kinds of people.
Yes.
if he can do that, you know, and in that gleaning, he will then have a team that is so powerful, it'll be really hard to beat or even argue with, because when that man brings the vision of where we can actually go, he'll win the hearts of the people, and that's where it's going to have to begin.
Yeah, those
got to start with the heart of the people.
Yeah, those are great attributes. So when you were talking about biblical, I thought you were going to refer to Exodus, which we've talked about on the show before. There are four qualifications basically in Exodus. One being, are you qualified for the job? Do you have experience to do the job? Two is your heart in the right place, and gosh, the other two are escaping me right now. But I like this as well, because this is talking about perspective and the individual exactly where they're at in their life. And by the way, your description of the prophet is very much like Plato's Republic, where the ideas are more real than our world, so to speak, than the physical world. But nonetheless, I think you're right. The person needs to have empathy, which is what the priest brings. He needs to have that big view, which is what the prophet brings. And he needs to know how to get things done and delegate authority, which is what the king brings. So who do you think, is there any one person out there right now in this field, not in the past, but in this field that fits that the bill?
All of the contenders to date, they have one or two of those attributes that I can actually recognize, because they're obvious to me.
Okay.
But at this point, I haven't seen anyone that has all three.
Can you name anybody out there that you would say does and you would like to see them get in the race?
No, I really can't at this time, because I really haven't heard, you know.
Okay.
I really haven't heard enough.
All right.
I can tell you who shouldn't get into office.
Who?
Hitler-y.
Heil Hitler-y. Amen to that, John. Hey, listen, I appreciate it. Have you ever gotten a bottle of Roxy Pacifics?
Yeah, I do. As a matter of fact, I've got them. I've already ordered some. So,
excellent.
Listen, you guys. You guys have a grand program. You got a lot. You're going to get a lot more people listening to you, because I know there are a lot of people that just cannot listen from 5 to 6.
Well, that's why we expanded the show. That plus we just like to talk.
Well, that's all right. I like hearing you guys,
and we like it when you call the show.
Okay,
great points,
you.
And we'll keep that in mind. Matter of fact, Colonel McKnight's going to be on the show tomorrow. I'll bring all that up with him. I think he'll agree with you.
He's really good. I really like listening to him.
Indeed, we do as well.
Yeah, Danny McKnight. Yeah.
Yep. You got it, man.
Every time I hear him, I want to go out. I want to go out and rent that video, Black Hawk Down.
Yeah, you know, I saw it was on. I forget what it was, A&E or one of the.
Yeah, just the other night.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, Danny McKnight, the real Danny McKnight, is so much tougher than the Tom Sizemore character in the movie.
Well, I hear you. Yeah, I hear you.
All right.
A lot has to do probably with the director.
All right. Well, if you're in the neighborhood, we're going to hit Cafe Positano after the show tomorrow night. We'd love to have you join us.
Danny will be there, too.
Appreciate the invitation.
All right, thank you.
Take care now.
All right, you too, John. All right, thank you. We got to take a break. When we come back, we got a couple more phone calls. We'll get right to them. Welcome back to the show, folks. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries. Don't forget, don't go away at 6 o'clock. I mean, we'll still be here, and we'll be here until 7. The Rays will be playing again tonight, and the game starts at 7. So the pregame show, starts at 6:30. So you'll have us on AM 660 The Answer airwaves up until 6:30. But we're always on AM660TheAnswer.com, no matter what the Rays are doing. So if you got a computer, you can hear us there. And once again, that's going to happen every day this week, but not every day next week. And it'll happen less and less as the season goes along. There'll be several weeks during the season that we'll have all 5 days, 2 full hours. So we're excited about this as we can be. All right, let's go to Phil. Thank you for calling, Phil.
All right, guys, I appreciate what you're doing. Doing a good job.
Thank you, sir.
Glad you got 2 hours. You need it.
Thank you.
Yeah, that's Numbers 18, starting with verse 12, and you go to verse 21, and
Exodus
fills out those four qualities right there.
Yeah, remind me what they are, Phil. I'm embarrassed that I forgot two of them.
Okay, go to Numbers 18.
Yep.
And go to verse 21. 18:21.
Yep.
And when somebody says, well, where does it say that a Christian is supposed to be in politics? Hey, take them to Proverbs 29, verse 2.
Yeah, there you go. It's all right there.
You got it.
It's, I mean, our founding fathers were no fools, and they did a lot of reading in the Bible.
Yeah.
So you're absolutely right, Phil.
Yeah.
All right. Well, listen, I appreciate you being out there. Thanks for that.
I appreciate you guys. All right, bye.
All right. Thank you, sir. Okay. So, yeah, we you know, there's plenty of guidance in the Bible. You know, one of the best descriptions I ever heard for the Bible, I was in a Bible study group, and this one guy said, you know, my dad told me it was a handbook on life. And I look at it as my handbook on life. Whenever I have a problem, whenever there's something that confuses me, I know I can find the answer in here. You know, he's right. It's a handbook of life. Dennis Prager has this great new book out about the Ten Commandments, and we're going to work to get Dennis on the show. And basically, in the Ten Commandments, it's not so much to they are there to organize society, but basically they're there to guide you in how to live your life. If you follow those commandments, you'll have a whole lot less aggravation in your world. You may not end up in the same place that if you go breaking them. That guy, I think, is a given. But you'll end up in a far better place if you follow those commandments. Which is why it's so important that we teach these things to our youngest, to our children, that they see these things regularly. And to take this stuff out of our schools and our public arenas is just self-destructive behavior. Is all it is. It's some sort of bizarre addiction, you know, and it leads to self-destruction, which is also part of the problem. You know, the president has this new calling in life. He says, we are in this for the long haul. This will remain a mission for me and Michelle, not just for the rest of my presidency, but for the rest of my life. His vow to fight for equality. Lair, have you ever tried to make two people equal? Do you think it would even be possible?
Who's going to determine what equality is?
Well, that's the first problem that you're going to have, right? The second problem that you're going to discover is that no two people are equal.
Mm-mm.
So in other words, to get them to be equal, one or the other or both of them is going to have to suffer some way so that they can be brought into this equilibrium. Right?
Or one has to have the ego that they are better anyway and that they have what the other one needs.
Well, it plays into all of that sort of thing. We shouldn't be fighting for equality. We should be fighting for strong souls and spirits. And that's going to naturally lead to inequality, but that should be welcomed. We don't want everybody equal. You want to talk about a bland world. And a world where there is no liberty, that is what it would take to bring about equality. Human beings are naturally unequal. We are naturally predisposed with unique talents and predispositions. And God did it that way on purpose. Because you cannot build a city with equal people. You cannot even build a house with equal people.
Well, Chris, how can you even have inequality without envy?
Well,
I mean, that's what they pray. They how they prey on people is the envy. Your life isn't as good as that. Now, you know, a lot of people would love to be Brad Pitt, but frankly, I wouldn't be Brad Pitt for anything in the world. I'm sorry. I'd like to have my own life. I like, you know, being not famous.
Envy is the emotion that these appeals for equality is playing on. It's not rational. It's emotional, which is why, in the end, it's not healthy. But what is healthy is having 2 hours when you got a whole lot to say. Instead of talking to myself on the way home last night, I actually sat there and listened to the radio because I did all the talking on air.
Oh, how envious you are. Well, like the man said, we will be back in just a...
Ladies and gentlemen! I'm a roll on a honey. I'm a roll on a honey.
and roll on the second hour of the American Adversaries Drive Time. The new two-hour show on AM 660 The Answer. Blair Adams with you here and sitting with our host, Christopher Hart, and he has got the little show list here. And Chris, I guess I noticed in here Harry Reid poking fun at Barack Obama. What is that?
Not so much poking fun at him.
He couldn't be disagreeing. Now I know that couldn't happen.
Yeah, Larry's reading off our outline. We don't use a script, but we do use an outline. I do up an outline before every show, kind of. You know, so we don't get too far off the track. But yeah, Harry Reid, you know, it's this new trade deal. And we talked about this, I think, were you there that night when we talked about the significant things? I think that you may have been out there.
I think it was off that night.
Yeah, you were, yeah. But a couple of Sundays ago, we talked about some significant things that had happened the prior week. And one of the significant things that had happened that prior week was that the Republicans had actually teamed up with President Obama to give him fast-track trade authority to push these free trade agreements through, in particular this big Pacific Rim trade deal.
Sure.
And I said this is significant, for one, that the Republicans are working with this president, for two, that they would actually trust this guy to negotiate a deal that would be in any way good for the United States of America.
Or do what he says.
And three, that the Republicans could use that to put Hillary in sort of a tricky position, because Elizabeth Warren is dead set against this trade status and these trade agreements, as is now also Harry Reid. And what Harry Reid has done is he's thrown up a roadblock in the Senate as the minority leader to try to prevent the Senate from voting on allowing the president to have fast-track trade authority. And what that means basically is they give the president the full authority to negotiate a free trade agreement, and then they simply vote up or down on it. There will be no amendments to it, no real debate on it. They'll basically just vote.
Can't
up.
Tack any other bills onto it.
And it's very reminiscent of Obamacare, that they won't even know what they voted on until after they have voted on it. So in this one, I got to say, go Harry Reid, you know, because I'm not against globalization and us trading with other countries around the world, but I don't like to have the worst trade negotiator or the worst negotiator in the world, you know, negotiating for us. I would try, if I were the Senate, the Republicans, to find some way to stall. Now, they say that if we don't go forward with this, we'll be left out of it, and that these other trading partners will be, you know, they'll be doing business without us. Well,
nah, they're not going to.
Not likely, no.
We got all the money.
You got it. So, you know, the Republicans don't have to, give away the bank along with Barack Obama. All right, we got Don on the line. Don, thank you for calling. Is Don still with us?
I sure am.
Go ahead, sir.
Number one, great that you're up to 2 hours.
Thank you, sir.
Number two, I've been listening to you all these years, along with my wife, every evening.
Thank you.
Number three, we love Eva.
Thank you.
We love our listeners.
Absolutely. Couldn't do without you.
We love Pasquale Barba because we've been going there since he opened the place.
Is that right?
As we can, yeah.
Well,
I have gift certificates.
Well, I was going to say, I'll send you a gift card.
Not necessary.
Okay. All right.
Okay. I want to apologize to Pasquale, Eva, Sherry, and the rest for being a little bit selfish, because I'm an old guy. I'm in my 80s. I'm not on the internet, all that kind of stuff. So the only way I can get information is the way I'm doing it now. And I've been trying to puzzle you out all these years, and I want to ask you, I want to run some names by you that might be mutual acquaintances, okay?
All right.
Rocky Santomassino.
I don't know Rocky, but I know Kathy.
Is that his sister?
Yes, it is.
All right. Vance Henson.
Vance Henson was a dear friend of mine. I miss Vance so very much.
I knew that from day one.
Yeah.
Dan, his father, was a...
Dan, I don't know so well. I knew Vance's mother a little bit better, because I used to go over there for the Christmas parties. Do you remember the Christmas parties?
Yes, Victoria.
Yes, absolutely. And she and I kind of hit it off, And Vance was a dear friend of mine. We worked at a place called Set Unlimited together for a while. We used to play guitars together for a while, jam, and had several mutual friends. As a matter of fact, Lair and I have a mutual friend, Mark
Richfield.
Who was also a dear friend of Vance's. I think Mark might have actually went to school with Vance. I can't remember. That's uncanny.
Yeah, that's a gut feeling. Cassidy?
Who?
John Cassidy.
Well, John, if you're talking about the former
psychologist,
the
jail psychologist.
Yeah, I knew him because I took a couple of classes with him at Valencia Community College. It was funny because I was in there because I was picking up some psychology credits, and that particular school of psychology, was intriguing and fascinating to me. I was the only one in there that either wasn't a police officer or going to become a police officer. So I was kind of a case study for them all. But he was a great guy, and I learned a lot in that class. A whole lot.
Here's a big one.
Okay.
Attorney John Hart.
Who?
Attorney John Hart.
No, I don't know him.
Oh, okay.
Sure don't.
Now, the Hubbard Construction, I know a lot about that, and Dean Gruber, too. So you've validated my gut feelings about the mutual acquaintances that we might have, and I might add that all these people were stellar.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I love every one of them, too. And, you have reached right down into my soul there, Don. And so we must be soul brothers. So I really hope I can meet you over at Cafe Positano or somewhere else because we got a lot to talk about.
Yeah, maybe one of these days, but that's great. And, again, I apologize to everybody else for being selfish with your time.
No, sir.
We got 2 hours now, right?
That's right. We can relax and we can actually, not be uptight about all this. So, no, you call anytime. And hey, thanks for bringing the memories of those people to my foremind. Thank you very much, Don.
Wonderful people.
Absolutely. Yeah. And are you, as are you and your wife. And thank you for the comments about the show and, most importantly, for listening to the show. We really appreciate that. Wow, that's amazing. That is amazing. Okay, if you'd like to be a part of the show, folks, 407-774-8255 is the number. Please do give us a call. We'll be here on the airwaves until 6:30. We'll be on AM660TheAnswer.com until 7. And I'm kind of like Don, I still listen to the radio to get most of my news. And guess what? I shouldn't say everybody, but more people in the United States listen to the radio to get their first blush at the news than any other source. And that includes the internet, includes newspapers, and includes TV.
It's usually on the way to work, too.
That's right. That's right.
Or the way home. So they get the day's news on the way home.
That's right. Radio still is one of the most effective ways to get the message out there, which is why I feel that we are in the right place at the right time. And if you folks would like to help us out, if you want to be a part of what we're doing here, then go online and join us at the American Adversaries Radio website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com. And just go to the recruiting office and become a member of the American Adversaries Army. I think you'll feel good about it, especially if you like this show. If you don't like this show, still do it. Then you'll know what we're talking about on the inside with our intel briefs. And they're a lot of fun. And we're putting the third one together now. It'll be out in about a week or 10 days. And we're trying to get it to where they'll come out on the 15th of every month. So we're getting each month, we're getting closer and closer to that. So that is our goal. So we'll either hit it this month or next. But we're having a lot of fun doing this, and we're so very gratified that we have so many people in our listening audience. By the way, since we are now in our new hour, there may be some of you out there who have never heard of our show before. Well, we've been on the air here for 4.5 years now, and started out on Sunday nights, and then we're doing the 5 to 6 o'clock drive time show. Now we're 5 to 7 drive time prime time. And if you haven't heard us before, just give us a try. I think we'll grow on you. And As a matter of fact, later this week, I'll haul out my description of why we call the show The American Adversaries. I haven't said that in quite a while, and I know we've got some listeners out there now, a lot of you, who've never heard it, because I haven't said it in so long, and we're getting new listeners all the time. We're so grateful for that. Okay, we got a break we're coming up on now. Don't forget, it's Tuesday. That means it's free tune-up Tuesday. If you do have a computer or laptop, go over to the Refresh Computers in Longwood on 434 between 1792 and Ronald Reagan Boulevard. It's free to get that thing tuned up. You can wait around or you can go get a little bite to eat and come right back and pick it up. It's up to you. 407-478-8200 is the number at Refresh Computers, and David Levitt of Refresh Computers will be in the show tomorrow night.
And what's the cost on getting that computer cleaned up there, Chris?
Free.
Free, so you can't talk them down. No, we are the American Adversaries. And again, this was our first installment of the second hour. I know that sounds confusing, but we'll
second
be back.
Second installment of the second hour.
Of something. Anyway, we'll be back to straighten it out.
Okay, welcome back to the show, folks. You got the American Adversaries. We are live, and we'll be here until 7 o'clock. The Rays will be coming up here at 6:30, so if you like baseball, stick around for that. By the way, folks, some of you may be wondering what happened to Gary Kaltbaum. Gary Kaltbaum is still producing shows here at Salem Communications Group, Salem Media Group, Orlando. And he's on one of our sister stations, 1520 WBZW. And, of course, you can also hear him at his website.
And that was his choice, folks.
Yeah. Yep. So he opened up the door for us, and we jumped right in there. And it could not have happened without the station manager, Bill Files, and the programming director, Pete Paquette, extending us this opportunity. And we certainly do appreciate it, and we intend to make the most out of it. Okay, 407-774-8255 is the number if you want to give us a call. Before we go into just the web broadcast, I want to bring something else out for you folks who are listening on the airwaves. Alan Grayson is getting the cold shoulder. Did you hear about that?
Mm-mm.
Yeah, he is getting the cold shoulder from the Florida Democratic Senatorial Party. So let me see what the actual name of the group is. The Democratic Senate Campaign Committee has endorsed, drum roll please, Representative Patrick Murphy to be the candidate for the Senate seat presently held by Marco Rubio, who's going to have to give it up because he's running for president. Patrick Murphy, you ever heard of him? No, neither.
No, but if he wins, wouldn't that be Murphy's Law?
Murphy's luck, because he is basically a political unknown, at least anywhere outside of the southern part of the state, where he is the second term. He is a second term House member. He's only 32 years old. They say he's an up-and-coming rising star in the Democratic Party, and I suspect that that may be perhaps some of what the thinking is with the Democrats, that he's a long shot, but it will get him some name recognition, perhaps maybe for a run later on, maybe at the governorship or something like that.
And they don't want the Grayson baggage, possibly.
They don't want Alan Grayson. They think he is too, get this, liberal. That's right.
No.
Yeah, that's right. They think that he's too liberal. The Orlando Sentinel says it's the latest move by establishment Democrats. I didn't know there were such a thing. To unite behind Murphy, a South Florida moderate, in his second House term. There are concerns that a run by the liberal Grayson could hurt the party's chances in a major swing state. Now, this makes me want to wonder about the presidential politics of all of this, because you would think that they would want as liberal a ticket as possible if they're going to have someone like Elizabeth Warren or a liberal Hillary Clinton on the ticket. But if Hillary Clinton's going to be running as a center-of-the-road moderate, you might not want Alan Grayson around.
Well, the numbers that Hillary is getting right now are bad and getting worse.
They are, but she still beats the Republicans. The Wall Street Journal Wall Street Journal NBC did a poll. The results are on the front page of today's Wall Street Journal. The title of the article, Clinton's Support Takes Hit, But Holds. her negative view has jumped, people's negative view of her,
I should say,
has jumped from 36 to 42 in just over a month. And people who view her as honest and straightforward has also dropped over that time period as well. So her numbers are deteriorating. You're correct about that. But she's still beating the Republicans in head-to-head contests. Rand Paul does the best against her at this particular time in the polling for the
race. Well, that seems to change each week. One week it was Rubio, one week it was Jeb Bush.
Well, that's because you got so many different Republicans, and as they get into the race, you know, they get a little bit of a splash, get a little bit of a bump, get some, you know, some press and some attention. She is in it, you know, basically alone. I mean, Bernie Sanders is in, but he is there. No, he's there as enhanced, as what Lucas calls the wrestling term is enhancement talent. He's there to make her look a certain way. He is there to make her look centrist to the independents out there and the Democrats who aren't diehard liberals. So I suspect that all of this put together means that should Hillary get the nomination, she's not going to run as a liberal. She's going to run as moderate, middle of the road. So I think you Republican strategists out there need to put that in the computer and work that out. I would take it either way. But it tells me that liberalism is, and I presume they've already done some research and polling on this, that liberalism is losing favor. And you can't run as a liberal and expect to win. That's what both of these things are telling me at this time. And once again, I think we have President Obama to thank for that. But I'm sure Alan Grayson will do just fine. I would not be surprised, even without these type of endorsements, that Grayson would win because he can rake in the dough. And I'm pretty sure he will outrun fundraise all these other candidates in his party. And he would be I don't know if formidable is the right word, but he would be a worthy candidate. I don't mean worthy in the sense that I would agree with much of what he says, although every now and then I do find myself in agreement with him. For instance, he stood up for Netanyahu when he spoke in the House chamber.
He was the only one that asked any real questions of Hillary on the Democratic side during the Benghazi hearing.
Yeah, but what I mean in terms of a formidable candidate is that he knows how to run and win elections. And he can play dirty, he can play rough, he can do what he needs to do to win. And so if he were to get the nomination, we better have a good Republican running. I would love to see Alan, what's his name, Colonel Alan
West.
Alan West. Yeah, I'd love to see him leave Texas, come back to Florida, his real home, and run for that Senate seat, because I think it would be his to have. We shall see, though. There hasn't been much speculation as who the Republicans are going to run. But now that Rubio has made it official, he cannot run for re-election for the Senate. So the Republicans are going to have to put somebody up to run against either Grayson or Patrick Murphy or whoever else may come along. Also bad news, I guess, for Charlie Crist. If he wants to run now, he'll have to take up the mantle of the Libertarian Party.
Oh, the poor guy.
It won't bother him. I don't think they would have him. I don't know. We'll ask David Levitt tomorrow night. Besides being the owner of Refresh Computers, he's also the chairman of the Seminole County Libertarian Party. Okay. We've got to go to the break here in just a moment. Once again, a reminder, if you're listening to us on AM 660, The Answer over the airwaves, the Rays pregame show will start here in about 2 minutes. But if you can listen to us on the computer, we'll still be live until 7 o'clock and still be taking phone calls as well. And don't forget, folks, Cafe Positano is a great restaurant. You heard Don talking about it earlier. We'll be there tomorrow with Colonel McKnight. Mike McBass probably going to be there with us. Going to have a grand old time there. And it's great for meetings. It's great for parties.
Mm-hmm.
Lair and his family.
Big groups.
Yeah, take his mom there for
24 people there.
Yep. And they got a great dining area, fine dining for that. They have a full bar. They have casual dining. And their number over there is 407-774-8080. And we're looking at sometime in June to do our next remote broadcast over there. And it will be our first two-hour remote broadcast since we did the Republican convention. Remember?
Oh, that's right. Yep.
We did some two-hour remotes from over there. Anyway, I hope you're enjoying the show. If you've never listened to us before, I hope you'll stick around and continue to listen to us. And this is what we do, and we like to think that we do it pretty good, and we certainly hope that you enjoy it. Once again, you are listening to the American Adversaries, and when our show is over, it will be archived at AmericanAdversariesRadio.com. And if you didn't hear our Sunday night show, we had a lot of fun Sunday night, and you can go there to hear that show as well. Okay, when we come back, we'll be talking about, there's another guy who got beat up on, well, actually he died from having an accident on his treadmill.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, this is this guy that, this big internet guy. I think even the president said some words about him today.
Yeah,
he took a spill on his treadmill. It was supposed to be one of those rubber band things. No, this guy was on a mechanized treadmill. We'll talk about that and a whole lot more. And we're back. And Sunny joins us every Sunday night at 7 o'clock. We had a great conversation with her and one of her friends, the Stro, Maestro, Rob Kellum, who is a longtime professional wrestler, still wrestling, wrestled against, basically, you name a professional wrestler, Hulk Hogan, you name him. He wrestles, has wrestled against him, his great-grand-uncle, Gorgeous George.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I want to talk about a couple of folks who passed away in this segment
of
the show.
Was Gorgeous George Jr. actually the son of Gorgeous George?
I believe it was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And he was going to be Gorgeous George the Third. That was going to be his name, and it just didn't work out. David Goldberg, he's the CEO, was the CEO of SurveyMonkey.com. I don't know. Have you ever heard of SurveyMonkey? What is that, Nick?
It's they set up templates for big companies. I mean, Disney actually uses them to set up surveys for their guests to take. It's huge.
Okay, I see. It's Well, he was the chief operating officer. He'd also held prominent positions at Yahoo and a couple of other internet companies. He was exercising in a hotel gym, a Four Seasons hotel in Punta Mita, Mexico. And he was in there by himself, evidently in the afternoon, walking on the treadmill, and he took a spill, and he fell on the ground and busted the back of his head open, and essentially began to bleed to death. He was found by his brother, evidently a couple of hours later. They took him to the hospital in near the nearby town of Nuevo Vallarta, where he died. The cause of death was given a severe brain injury and shock caused by massive loss of blood. And he is survived by his wife, Cheryl Sandberg, who some of you may know that name. She is the COO, that's the chief operating officer of Facebook. I believe he was also known, probably a friend of the president's. It's a sad thing, you know, that he would take a spill off a treadmill and die like that.
I've almost taken a spill on one before, but not to the point where I could really bust my head open, I wouldn't think. But
well, you know, they can be dangerous, you know. And I've seen the things on those, one of those shows, the blooper shows or the video shows.
America's Funniest.
Yeah, where you see some guy getting thrown off the thing and laugh, you know.
It'll launch you.
Hey, it can be a deadly experience.
Close for him.
Next time you're on a treadmill, be very, very careful.
Tread carefully.
Yes. Do you remember Yeoman Rand?
Oh, yes. Grace Lee Whitney.
Yep. She has passed away.
No.
Yep.
I was in love with her.
Yeah, a lot of other guys were in love with her, too. Maybe a few girls. I don't know. But, yes, she wore those short skirts, you know, in the early Star Trek episodes.
Kind of funky hairdo.
Yep. And she had kind of like the distance love affair with Kirk.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, remember the one time they went on the planet? Yeah, the Miri.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. But matter of fact, she came back and she was in Star Trek.
The first motion picture. She didn't look good then.
She was in that one. She was in Star Trek III, The Search for Spock. She was in IV, The Voyage Home, and Star Trek VI, The Undisclosed Country.
Undiscovered Country.
You're right. Undiscovered country. Yep. Thank you. She was out of show business for a while because she had fallen into alcoholism and struggled with it for a while. She finally broke the addiction and wrote a book about it called The Longest Trek, her autobiography in 1998. And she got back into show business with the help of Leonard Nimoy.
Wow.
And, of course, he just recently died.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Yeoman Rand. Has,
and how old was she?
Let me see if it says here. 85.
85? Doggone.
Yeah, she made it 85. And yeah, the alcoholism had really sort of done a number on her. But, yeah, she was quite the, you know, the good-looking woman back in those days. Well, she still
She didn't age well.
No, but she fought that addiction and she fought her way through it and she came out on the other side and, we'll have to, you know, have our hats off to her for that. And, a little Star Trek trivia there for you. You know, the Star Trek fans will be, you know, I guess sad to see her go because she was a regular at all the Star Trek.
The first season, I think. I mean, she started phasing out after that.
Because she had become an alcoholic.
Well, also, too, they wanted Kirk to start having affairs with different women each week.
Yeah, yeah. She was in the first season.
Mr. Lover.
The first season in 1966. That's right. Okay, that's right, folks. You got the American Adversaries. If you're listening to us now, you're listening to us on AM660TheAnswer.com, and we appreciate that. But we're still in the studio. We're still live. If you want to give us a call, do it. 407-774-8255 is the number.
A lot more interesting than baseball pregame.
That's right. As a matter of fact, if you're out there, if you've never called the show, or if you've never gotten a My Liberty Threads t-shirt and you want one, give us a call. I'll give you a My Liberty Threads t-shirt just for calling the show. All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. You know, earlier in the show, I was talking about how the president has found his calling in life, and that is to pursue equality. that's like a Don Quixote-type thing, isn't it? But if it keeps him occupied and out of our hair, I mean, more power to him, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's his windmill.
Yeah, unfortunately, I'm afraid that it's only going to be that he's only going to be in our hair even that much more. But I don't expect him to be very successful at it because, for one, I don't think he's as sincere about it. I think he's just giving it lip service. And two, I don't think that he really knows how.
That's what he's got Sharpton in there for lessons.
Yeah, I suppose so. Last week, there was an op-ed in the Orlando Sentinel, and I wanted to talk about it a little bit Sunday night, but we really didn't have enough time, although I did reference it a couple of times. It was an op-ed by a fellow by the name of Charles Michael Byrd. And Charles Michael Byrd, as far as I know, his only claim to fame is that he is part black, part white, and part Cherokee Indian, and he lives in Queens, New York. But he wrote a great column entitled, In Ferguson, Obama Missed His Chance to Transcend Race. And I know we've talked about this a little bit before, but the president is uniquely positioned, first of all, by being president. I mean, you got the bully pulpit. You got the whole world's attention simply because you are the president of the United States. But this particular president came to office with great opportunity to do actually good things for this country. He could have been a really great president. No, I haven't been drinking during the break. I know what I'm talking about here. What I mean by that is that the circumstances were right for somebody with his, shall I say, racial makeup. To really be a force for positive in this country. And that's what this fella talks about in his article, where he talks about the president had the opportunity, being that he was from a mixed race couple, that his mother was white, his grandparents on his mother's side white, his father was black, you know, his heritage going back to Kenya in Africa, and that being as such, he was kind of a walking and talking version of the United States, where you have this melting pot of different peoples who come together as Americans. Now, I'm not saying necessarily that his parents did that, but what I'm saying is that he had that in his blood, literally. He had that in his blood. And unfortunately, he didn't live up to the calling. And that's what this guy talks about in his article that he wrote. And let me just read just a couple of paragraphs of it. He says, and I'm starting about the middle way in it, he says, against this exaggerated black backdrop, and he's talking about what went on in Ferguson. He says, against this exaggerated backdrop of black-white violence, who dares utter the truth that America is essentially a blended nation? Logically, the first mulatto president would not have merely worked to ratchet down the violence in Ferguson, but also speak to commonality. Humans are far more similar than different. And this is something that conservatism is built on, in that humans have all these same similarities. Liberalism is built on our differences. And pointing out our differences and making a big deal of our differences. Why do we need equality, for instance? Because we have all these differences. And we can't have all these differences because they lead to inequality and wealth and opportunity and blah, 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 blah. Let me read on now. He says, humans are far more similar than different. Some have accused President Obama of not being black enough, though. Should he have flown to Ferguson and joined in the demonstrations with pants hanging below the crack in his butt while holding a lit blunt in one hand with which to light a Molotov cocktail and a Colt 45 malt liquor bottle in the other?
Ooh.
Oh, Obama is the president of all Americans. Yet he has squandered a golden opportunity to articulate that external differences matter little when you consider we all possess the same flesh, blood, and bone bodies that will age, decay, and pass away. Does the president possess the requisite level of consciousness, though, to delineate differences between essence and form, soul and body? In other words, what he's saying is, The president is caught up in whether a person is black or white. It should not matter, especially to a man who is, quote unquote, both black and white. I read on now. The president de-emphasizes his European ancestry in favor of a philosophy advancing black or of color as appropriate identities for all non-whites, including those mixed. This worldview holds that until the last remnant of perceived white racism / privilege is verifiably eliminated, all non-whites must lend their energy to maintain a counterweight of color, an aggregate socio-political force designed to bring whiteness to its knees. And right there, he has come to the conclusion, except I would substitute the word conservatism to its knees for where he says whiteness. In other words, he's saying that making sure that we all know our differences, that blacks are different than whites, and whites, you know, discriminate against blacks, and all this other stuff. This is all mainly to bring conservatism, what he calls whiteness, to its knees. In other words, it has nothing really to do with trying to help these people. It has everything to do with bringing white conservatism down. Well, it was white conservatives who gave us the Constitution that made it possible for black slaves to not only become free, but to eventually also have the right to vote and have all the other rights and privileges that everybody in our society has. Now, you can be mad at them that they didn't do that right away, but the political forces of the day would not allow it right away. It took time. But what they did do was they put in place a system that would make sure that it eventually would happen. I'll finish up now a little bit more of his article. Activists point to radical disparities in joblessness, median household income, and home ownership. Any significant change in a person's life must begin with that individual, though. No politician can magically place folks in new homes, fill their bank accounts, and position them in dream jobs based on group affiliation. Well, in fact, that's what we're trying to do.
Oh, yes.
And it is destroying us in the process. And he finishes up saying, the president is surely aware of the repugnance of identity politics. He may be aware of it, of being repugnant, but he also is aware that it works for Democrats, unfortunately.
And they use it all the time.
Yeah, in the remainder, this fellow Byrd says, in the remainder of his administration, he can salvage a legacy of pointing the way toward a transcendent commonality, a transcendence of the race notion altogether. Does the president have the courage to plant the seeds of that change? I don't think it's a matter of courage. It's a matter of willingness. And no, he does not. Because that doesn't work for liberals. It's too conservative. All right, we'll be right back. One more segment to go. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. Nick's pulling out some stuff from the old library there. All right, you got us until 7 o'clock. And then there's still a lot of great radio here all night long on AM 660, theanswer.com. Okay, you got the American adversaries here. Christopher Hart, Lair Adams will be with you live until 7 o'clock. There's an interesting story out of Boston. Not your hometown, but one of your digs up there, right, Nick?
Yeah, I'm excited to see what you're going to talk about here.
Well, this has been a court case that's been going on evidently two decades. You know, with all this stuff going on about Bruce Jenner and everything, you know, there's a lot of focus and you know, Bradley Manning, that guy that was convicted in the Army. I think it was Bradley Manning who was convicted of doing a document release. Anyway, he was put in prison.
Private Manning, yes.
Yeah, and
yes.
Then he wanted to be. And now he wants to be a woman.
Now he wants to be a woman, yes. Well,
right, and so the military is contemplating. Matter of fact, I believe the military is paying for his change over.
Oh my God!
Well, there was a convicted murderer in prison in Massachusetts who has for two decades been demanding the same thing.
Yep.
And this person's name is she now goes by the name of Michelle Kosolek. And when he went to prison, he was a man, decided he wanted to be a woman while he was in there, and has been petitioning the state of Massachusetts to have to pay for it. And the state of Massachusetts, through both Democratic and Republican governors, and by the way, they have a Republican governor there right now. I wasn't aware of this. His name's Charlie Baker.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, they have resisted wanting to pay for his sex change, and the Supreme Court has sided with the state of Massachusetts.
Oh,
like
my
that?
Gosh, that's horrible.
I didn't know you were a bunch of, you know, transgender phobes up there in Massachusetts.
Hey, I am a Floridian through and through now. I don't know if that's any better, actually, but.
There you go. What happened is the Supreme Court didn't actually make a decision. What they did was they refused to hear a lower court, review a lower court decision, which sided with the state and said, no, the state is not obligated to pay for a murderer to become or an inmate to become have their sex change while being an inmate in Massachusetts state prison.
On the government payroll.
Exactly. You know, if he wants to walk and talk and act like one, that's his choice, but they're not going to pay for him actually.
Dangerous thing to do in a men's prison.
Kind of depends on what you're trying to do. But anyway, the Supreme Court refused to hear the case where a lower federal court had said, no, the state has every right to deny that sort of thing. The state is charged with what they call custody and care, mostly. And we heard those words thrown around a lot during this Baltimore thing with Fred Gray. And there is legitimacy to that. As a matter of fact, the Federal Bureau of Prisons, their symbol, I guess their logo, is three C's. Each one inside the other. So you have a big C, then a smaller C inside of that one, and then a smaller C inside of those two. And they stand for custody, corrections, and care. And while you are in prison, they are supposed to keep you there and take care of you physically while you're there. But it pretty much stops right there. In the federal system, they throw in corrections. But basically, prisons are basically just places to punish you. And the correction comes from whether you get it or not.
You're incarcerated.
Right. And whether you like being incarcerated and go through it again or not. That's more or less up to, for the most part, is up to you.
Chris, do you think he was taking that corrections as you're correcting my sexual identity?
Well, if he was, he should have gotten himself thrown into the federal pen. Then he would have had more sympathy for it there. Good point, though. Good point. Yeah, he wanted to get his gender corrected, but I don't think that's what the feds had in mind. But the Manning seems to be getting more sympathy in Leavenworth. You would think it'd be the other way around.
Yeah.
That in Leavenworth, they'd say, go jump in a lake. And in Massachusetts, they'd be more like, I don't know. What kind of world we live in these days? Okay.
Well, look at Birmingham. That'll tell you.
Yeah, for real. Okay. Before we go, I just want to remind you, tomorrow night we will have Colonel Danny McKnight on the show with us, and I'm going to take inspiration from John, our earlier caller, and we'll talk to Colonel McKnight tomorrow night about leadership qualities and who he sees right now in the Republican field that has the most real leadership qualities that he feels comfortable with. That ought to be an interesting conversation.
Now, will we have him on for 2 hours?
We'll have him on for 2 hours.
Awesome.
David Levitt's going to be with us from Refresh Computers, and he's also the chairman of the Seminole County Libertarian Party. And there's got to be some stirrings going on amongst the libertarians with Rand Paul. You know, there's got to be. I wouldn't be surprised if the Libertarian Party of Central Florida has some inside line to Rand Paul. But we'll find out tomorrow from David Levitt.
And if they're even going to present a candidate this time.
Because they may, with Rand Paul, or that's a good question we'll bring up with David. So, but they will have a convention, so I presume they will pick a candidate, but we shall see. And also, I want to remind you about this prayer walk that's coming up on March the 16th. Please come out and join us. We're going to have Bruce Liske, who's one of the organizers of the march, on our show next week to talk more about it. It's going to be Saturday, May the 16th at Lake Eola Park from 4:30 to about 8:15. And it's just going to be about a mile walk. It's more just to get people together to pray and march for persecuted Christians and Jews worldwide. And we talk a lot about this on the show, and we excoriate pastors, you know, for not mobilizing the churches and their congregations to do at least speak out and recognize the persecution that's going on. Well, here's our opportunity to put our money where our mouth is, so to speak. And all you got to do is come out. It's free. Just come to Lake Eola, the promenade area on Central Avenue, at 4:30 on Saturday, May the 16th, and join us for the prayer march for persecuted Christians and Jews. And if you're interested in a roundtable discussion, there will be one held, the same topic, the night before at 6:30 at the First Presbyterian Church, which is on East Church Street right downtown there. That's the First Presbyterian right down heart of downtown, 6:30 Friday, for a roundtable discussion about the persecution of Christians and Jews worldwide. By the way, ISIS, I believe, just released a tape announcing they killed, I think it was 200 Yazidi Christians in northern Iraq sometime over the past evidently several days or weeks. So it is going on. It is going on. It's in high gear. I'm talking about this persecution. And we're not just talking about words and people drawing pictures. We're talking about people getting their heads cut off, people being pushed
just
off.
Just because they want to believe the way they want to believe.
Exactly. People being pushed off boats into the Mediterranean Sea because they're Christians on a boatload with Muslims. This is wrong. It's going on worldwide, and we can do something about it. And we start doing something about it by simply getting up and joining other people who are concerned about it as well. Saturday, May 16th at Lake Eola. Okay, that's just about going to do it for us tonight, and we certainly want to thank all you folks who are listening to us on the web right now, and we appreciate you being out there. After the show's over, how about going to our website, AmericanAdversariesRadio.com, and check out our recruiting office, and think about joining our army. We really would appreciate you joining up. That way you can be a part of what we're doing here, and you will get, I think, a lot out of it. Not just, I don't mean coupons and stuff like that, which you'll get.
You can even download them now if you...
Yeah, absolutely. Use them tonight. But you'll also get the satisfaction of knowing that that you're fighting in a real fashion for our country.
In a local fight.
Absolutely. Okay, that's going to wrap it up. The second of our two-hour shows. It's feeling right. I tell you, it's feeling right tonight.
Well, of course, tomorrow night's Hump Night with Colonel Danny McKnight and our good friend David Leavitt. That's right. He's coming in, and he will be talking computers along with everything else we talk about, folks. Colonel Danny McKnight, of course, from Black Hawk Down. Have a great evening, everyone, and we will see you tomorrow.
Night, everybody.